This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, turn it, point it, tune it, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Techno Gaze, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets, and technology. My name is Mark, and in the studio today we have Raina.
Hello.
And we also have Michael.
Hello there.
Michael's playing a big role in today's show.
Yes.
No. If it works, I'm playing a big role. If it doesn't work, I'm doing nothing.
Yeah, the saga of our new studio continues. It's great though. It's so cool.
It is. You just press the screen and it all comes to life.
Shall I do that?
No, it's going fine as it is.
Yes.
If it ain't broke, don't fix.
Oh. What does the big red button do?
Does something we don't want to do right now.
Okay.
So on today's show, we are going to talk a little bit about
heaps of stuff as usual.
How crowdsourcing is being used to help with or perhaps hinder the search effort for Malaysian airline flight 370.
Mm.
Of course, it's been in the news this morning, as it has been over the past 7 days or thereabouts.
That's right.
Very concerning. We celebrate the 25th year since the conception of the World Wide Web.
Yeah.
So not only, I think it was just last year, wasn't it, that we celebrated 20 years of it being in existence, but this is 25 years since inception.
Conception.
How about this one?
What?
Drones with tasers.
Ooh, I like
tasers.
Smart drones.
What could possibly go wrong?
Absolutely nothing.
And, back to local stuff. I just saw a message from Josh. Our friend Josh, who works here behind the scenes at Joy.
Don't break it.
He just said don't break.
He's been putting a lot of work into this, hasn't he?
Don't break what, Josh? What do you mean?
But the thing is, if it's designed properly, you just can't break it. So really, we're doing him a favour if we break it, because we're showing up where it's not working properly.
We're testing.
Yes.
No, so back to what we've got on the lineup today. Telstra have made the news. They've been fined for a breach of privacy that occurred last year. We reported on the breach of privacy last year, but to bring it full circle, the court has found that they are guilty. I don't think it's a criminal thing, but
no, it wasn't criminal.
They have been fined. Later on, we'll talk about the festival known as South by Southwest, SXSW, I think is the common term online for it. We'll be donning our tinfoil hats.
Mark's tinfoil hat.
Putting it on right then. See? It may sound the same as that sound as what it did before.
Because it's a very well-made hat.
Of course, the NSA is beating encryption to spy on everyone. So we'll talk about that. CIA is being accused of hacking into a US government inquiry into torture. So that's our tinfoil hat segment.
All good stuff.
Mm.
And there's new super thin LED technology we're going to talk about later on too.
Super.
Now, if you want to contact us while we're in the studio, you can do so by texting us 0427JOY949. You can email us on air at joy.org.au. If you're listening to the podcast of this episode, you can tweet us at Technogaze, TechnoGaze. Tweet us anytime in relation to something that we've talked about. And
you can also follow us on our Facebook page.
Oh, yes, Facebook.
Yes.
That exists, doesn't it?
We need some more followers.
We do. We'd love to. If you follow us, we'll mention you on air. How about that?
That's quite the promise.
And second prize is we'll mention you twice.
But without any further ado, let's jump on to some news. Now, Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. It's been mentioned a few times. Of course, Ben's talked about it in the news, in the Joy News earlier today, as did Patrick in this morning's news as well. It's, you know, there's some technological components to this story that we should probably talk through today. The whole concept of crowdsourcing, for example.
I know. Who would have thought you could use crowdsourcing to help in the rescue effort like this? But apparently that's what they're doing.
How are they doing it?
Yes.
Well, there's a company called Digital Globe that does a whole lot of imaging and mapping. And they're using a platform called TomNod to get people to have a look at high-resolution satellite images of the area to look for debris or oil slicks or anything that might, you know, help in the recovery effort.
Mm. So we're talking about pictures of the ocean.
Yep.
And trying to find, like the one that has been made a bit public over the past, I think it was about 5 days ago or something.
There
was
the Chinese satellite image.
Perhaps looking at pictures like that to determine if something that might be a wave is actually an ocean wave might actually be a piece of debris.
Yep, or something like that. And according to Digital Globe, they've had more than 2 million people come and have a look.
Mm.
So whether the people are actually just signing up and having a look or whether they're actually going to more effort and actually looking at images is a little bit unknown.
Yes.
But still, 2 million is quite a number of people. And if anybody's interested, you can go to Digital Globe, D-I-G-I-T-A-L Globe, GLOBE.com, and there are links from there.
Raina.
Yeah.
Crowdsourcing.
Oh, you're picking on me because of the skeptic thing, aren't you?
Well, we were talking about it before the show, weren't we?
We were.
About sort of the human aspect of this. And, of course, crowdsourcing has been used in the past for similar types of investigations of finding needles in haystacks type thing.
Probably this is one of the few times where it has been sort of officially asked for, as distinct from a bunch of interested amateurs jumping on Reddit and you know, making suggestions, helpful suggestions.
Amateurs was a nice choice word.
It is a nice choice word, and it's very value-laden. Look, there are a lot of smart people out there in crowds, and whenever people talk about the wisdom of crowds, what they're saying is, you know, more eyes are better than fewer eyes, But in fact, what you can have when you have these crowds is some odd things. And looking outside of this whole picture thing for a minute, I think it's fair to say that there are a lot of very interested people who are out there trying to, you know, think it through and, you know, make guesses and stuff like that. And you know, journalists are sort of starting to jump on that and say, well, you know, a lot of people are thinking this, and it can sometimes get a little...
I think there's a distinction between, you know, ideas coming about because of people putting their ideas out there, as opposed to conclusions being drawn from a whole bunch of information that's perhaps incorrectly been pieced together in a bad way. I think there was an interesting a point of view put forward around, you know, this guy actually wrote a blog post about this particular jet, the 777 jet, and this safety report that was written about potential flaws.
Yeah.
Earlier in the week, it was around the underbody of the plane or something, and perhaps in a certain situation where a golf ball sized hole in the fuselage occurred, it could potentially mean the air pressure drops slowly enough for people not to notice, but to eventually cause
they pass
unconsciousness.
Out. Yeah,
you know, those kinds of ideas are, you know, they're ideas, and they should be analysed or looked at by experts in order to deem their importance or not, as opposed to simply a whole bunch of people coming together and talking amongst themselves and saying, hey, this is what could possibly occur, and therefore, you know, come to conclusions that, that potentially have, you know, catastrophic consequences.
I guess that's one of the dangers of crowdsourcing, is that it could encourage group thinking, where a whole lot of people get together and say, oh, this is what I think it is, and all the focus is aimed at that particular thing, and then you forget, or you don't get the opportunity to look broader and
groupthink.
Look outside the greater picture.
Now, there's an example I think you talked about, Raina, earlier, of where crowdsourcing has actually gone wrong, right?
So, right, and this wasn't really, no one was really sourcing this particular crowd, but you might remember from back in the days of the Boston bombings that there was, you know, some grainy footage and quite a lot of conjecture about what could have happened. And you know, some pictures and things floating around going, oh, you know, people are looking for a guy with a black, you know, a black backpack, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Reddit, a bunch of people on Reddit were getting together, you know, and going, oh, yeah, we're going to investigate, we're going to do all this stuff, rah, rah, rah. And they were coming up with some really interesting insights, but they all collectively, you know, sort of fanning their own flames there, fingered the wrong guy.
Yeah, and in doing so, actually...
possibly could have ruined his life.
Yeah.
You know, that's the sort of thing that... And that wasn't officially sought. It's not like the Boston Police Department and the FBI, whatever, were going, please, Reddit, help us. But all these news organisations were jumping all over it.
It just becomes an electronic lynch mob.
Yeah. Mm.
But you could argue, and this is almost a similar situation, where all the misinformation is actually, you know, there's a lack of perhaps progress, perceived progress on this Malaysian Airlines flight. And as a consequence, people are just going, well, let's try and fix this. You know,
let's fill the gap with our own weird information. That's right. The problem there is, I mean, especially nowadays when we do have, you know, such a ridiculous amount of information right there at our fingertips, people are like, oh, yeah, I don't watch the actual news anymore. I don't read actual newspapers. I get all my news from, you know, Reddit or you know, blogs or Metafilter or whatever it is that they're interested in, thinking, well, yeah, that'll do. And there's not...
It's a bit scary, isn't it?
Yeah, there's not a lot of control over what becomes viral and what doesn't. And it's not always for our benefit.
Yeah, yeah. You're listening to TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, covering some of the latest in tech. We'll be back with more in a few moments.
TechnoGaze.
Joy.
That's right. This is Joy 94.9. And this is TechnoGaze.
Sure is.
Raina, Mark, and Michael with you today. And... you're flailing your hands around me.
No, I should learn how to do hand signals better.
I think the MQFF screening is tonight. Is it?
Yeah. Tomorrow?
Tomorrow?
Well, no, okay. 6:15.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my
thumbs all over the place.
That's right. Actually, have you guys been to any MQFF sessions yet? I know it's only just started.
I possibly did go to the launch on Thursday night.
How was the launch, Mark?
It was good.
Good, great.
The film that was chosen was quite surprising. It was a tearjerker. But yeah, I got suitably lubricated afterwards as well. In a drunken kind of way.
In the sherbet kind of way. Indeed.
Now, Mark's been listening in and he quite likes our term electronic lynch mob. And he thinks it would make a perfect name for a hipster band.
Oh my goodness.
I wonder if it's already taken. I'm going to Google this.
electroniclynchmob.com. Let's see if it's gone.
I like it.
Oh geez. So,
should we do some news?
Yep.
Telstra.
Yes.
They breached the privacy of about 15,775, give or take, customers.
My goodness.
In 2012, 2013.
How did they do that?
They inadvertently published online personal information, and that included the names, phone numbers of 1,200 customers with silent numbers.
Whoops.
Yeah.
I have a silent number.
Mm. Oh, well...
maybe not so.
Don't worry, I already looked at the breach data. It's not me.
Apparently, what happened was there are a number of Excel spreadsheets that were published in terms of you could find them if you did a Google search. So they came up that way. So they weren't. I don't think they were on the front page of the Telstra website or anything like that. But they were certainly searchable, and people downloaded them at least 166 times that the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner could determine.
Mm.
And for this, Telstra was fined $10,200 for a breach under the Telecommunications Consumer Protections Code. So it wasn't underneath the Privacy Act, because the old Privacy Act was basically a toothless tiger. The new privacy laws that are coming
just recently coming in.
Yeah, I think they came in this month.
Yeah.
Probably the outcome would have been far, far different had they been prosecuted or... chased up under that.
Yes.
That doesn't seem like a lot of money.
$10,200, which isn't much at all.
That's not even a dollar per customer.
No.
It's a bit of a shame, considering Telstra is one of the largest companies of Australia, and the amount of cash that goes through that company is...
Which I guess is more of a reason why we as a country need these beefed up privacy laws, so that organisations that do breach privacy, either on purpose or by mistake, will sit up and think about it twice from doing it again in the future.
Well, they've in fact been, they've breached that exact thing before. This wasn't the first time they've done it.
Right.
And in fact, ACMA noticed that as well, that they failed to comply with the directions from before. I mean, how many times is it going to take?
Maybe several million dollars in fines might make them...
pay a little bit more attention.
Exactly.
Well, it brings to mind as well the other breach of privacy that's occurred, the names of asylum seekers that were published in a similar fashion on a website by the... that particular department, I think the Department of Immigration.
Terrifying.
Not a corporate entity, but the government agency, in fact, involved, did it. And, what's going to happen there? Who is anyone going to be... Well, it occurred before the new privacy legislation has taken effect.
So the worst that will happen is they'll get a slap over the wrists.
If only it was discovered a couple of weeks later, then the new legislation would have been in effect.
Yeah. Would be interesting to read the fine print of the legislation, see if there's any exclusion for government departments or not.
Yeah, I've got a feeling it's going to take a lot of really bad breaches for people to actually start taking this seriously and say, oh, no, workers, someone's just chucked a couple of Excel spreadsheets. No. It's way worse than that.
That's right. And I guess a lot of this has to do with Tim Berners-Lee.
Oh.
Blame him, why
Sir,
don't we?
Well, Sir Tim to you.
Sir Tim. Sir Tim.
He's a sir, isn't he? He's been knighted.
He's a knight, yes.
Of course, we're talking about the inventor of the World Wide Web, or the person who is largely credited as the inventor. I would suggest at the time it was a team effort, but he definitely played a very big role.
Yeah. So back on March 12th, 1989, which is just over 25 years ago, he wrote a proposal for what really would become the World Wide Web as we know it today. Now, that sort of sat there for a little bit, and it wasn't until the following year that he, together with a Belgian scientist called Robert Caillot, in 1990 proposed building the hypertext project that allowed browsers to access servers to retrieve information.
That's right. So this paper... that he came up with in 1989 was actually quite a lot vaguer than that. And in fact, his boss wrote on the cover, "Vague but exciting," which is probably the understatement of the century as regards that. But, it was basically along the lines of, we'd like a pool of information. We'd like it to be easy to use. It's universally linked. It should be, portable, general, et cetera, like all the things that we really value about the web now.
Well, all the things that we value in the non-corporatized web that has ensued since, the last probably decade or so. But, the fundamentals are there. You can link text to other documents and, provide information freely.
Great.
Or close to freely.
Yeah, and it also introduced the concept of client-server, which really wasn't in force at that time.
Right.
And, when I think about different paradigms now for communication, everything is you talk who's the client, who is the server.
Yes. Yep.
And that, to me, that is a huge conceptual change.
And, of course, hypertext. I love the term hypertext because it sounds so futuristic for a 1980s, 90s kind of technology, right?
It's got cyberpunk novels, mirror shades all over it. It's just...
Hypertext. But that's what the HT in HTTP...
Hypertext. Transfer protocol.
There was a lot of activity back then with markup languages. There was SGML and all sorts of things. There was the Army. I think SGML is the Army one, in fact, which is their standard something or other.
There's
markup
a lot
language.
Of people using it,
But HTML was the one that won the day.
Yes.
And a lot of things that sit on top of that as well. So, you know. Thank you, Tim Berners-Lee.
Probably be around for at least another 10 years.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll take off.
Now, and Twitter... And sorry.
I was going to try a segue to show how popular the web is. You know, popular social networking site Twitter, with its oodles and oodles of processing power, still isn't able to cope.
Are you going to blame that on Sir Tim as well?
Yes.
Everything is Sir Tim's fault today.
In an ironic way. No.
That's right. No, it had a big old crash, and it was the second time in 9 days, which, you know, in the early days of Twitter wasn't unusual, but nowadays this big, well-funded, publicly owned company is actually quite worrying.
And then there's a bit of an ironic twist to this.
Mm.
This happened when the Twitter co-founder Biz Stone was on stage at South by Southwest, which is exactly where Twitter was launched back in 2007.
Wow.
Whoops.
So maybe it was just one for the old times, you know, because Twitter used to crash left, right and centre.
With the fail whale?
Yeah. What are you going to do at South by Southwest if Twitter isn't up? What do you do? Like, what are you going to, like, Instagram people instead, or what are you going to do?
I don't know. Just go home.
Well, this actually, because I was looking at Twitter this week, and of course my, you know, the app auto-updates itself on my phone. They are tweaking the UI, the user experience, every few days or few weeks now.
Yeah.
And that's starting to annoy me a little bit because this is, of course, after Twitter have become a publicly listed company. They're trying to monetize themselves more and more. I suspect they're trying to change the UI to make us, perhaps follow more money-generating...
Maybe.
Aspects.
Maybe. Maybe the other thing as well is that they are maybe trying to avoid that whole Facebook thing. You know how Facebook doesn't change anything for months and months and months, and then suddenly they change everybody's interface altogether, and there's literally millions of petitions going, well, millions of people signing petitions going around going, oh, Facebook, put it back. You changed it. Now it sucks. Like, every time that Facebook changes something, people just flip it.
It's a funny thing, though. Facebook has the capability of creating pages, right? You can't really do that with Twitter. You can maybe create a hashtag, but it's not really the same thing. So you can't really sort of have, you know, hate Facebook's new UI stuff.
Mm.
Is it that Twitter doesn't really have that sort of that same hate?
It's possible, although I'm not really thinking about the hate so much as I'm just thinking about, I mean, it's everybody's place to hang out, right, is Facebook. You jump on there, you do that sort of thing. So whether you're making pages or not, as a consumer of a service, people will be sitting there going, oh, but they changed it. I hate that thing now. It sucks. If Twitter does it more often, then at least they can kind of spread the hate out over in tiny little lumps rather than springing on everybody.
So just a little bit of hate each time.
Mm. Yeah, just a tiny little bit of mild disgust.
Yeah.
Discomfort. I'm not sure.
Do you actually jump into your Twitter client when you get a tweet, or do you just sort of look at the notification as it pops up on your phone?
I'm a bit obsessive, and I actually go into the app because I want to clear that notification out of my phone.
I see.
You know, but that's
well, it's good that it's good that iPhone has notifications now. Something that Android's had for years.
My iPhone's had it for years and years.
About two.
Oh, are we going to start this now, are we?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. You're listening to Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. We're not going to have an Android versus Apple debate right now, much to your dismay at home, I'm sure. But we will be back in a few minutes.
Maybe minus Mark or myself.
Technogaze.
Yes, we are with you around the world on Joy 94.9. You can go to joy.org.au/listenlive.
Sure can.
And find ways to get onto the internet stream.
And you can download the smartphone app and do the same thing, can't you?
Indeed.
Yes, you can.
Yes. Bring it.
Yes, and you can listen to us on Android on the smartphone app.
Yes.
Gasp.
And there is also an iPhone one.
Mm.
No blood was shed during that little period
break
where Mark and I were arguing about Android and iPhone.
Now, your friend of mine, Ed Snowden, Turned up at South by Southwest, yes. Sort of, virtually.
In a video conferencey kind of way.
Good luck, I'm behind seven proxies.
What is South by Southwest exactly?
South by Southwest is, it's a festival, or a group of festivals rather, held in Austin in Texas. There is a film component, an interactive component, and a music component. And I guess depending on what kind of geek you are, you will be interested in at least one of those things.
Sounds interesting.
It sure is. And it's massive. It's like the biggest thing in the year. I guess the longest thing in the year, and you know, any number of tweets and things, you know, emanating from it, going free food, you know, parties with Grumpy Cat. You can go to a party with Grumpy Cat at South by Southwest.
I want to go just for that.
I want to hang out with Grumpy Cat, please.
Actually, our friend Jason, who's on the show every now and then, he has a couple of cats, and one of them looks like Grumpy Cat every now and then. He just, the facial expressions are amazing. Anyway. Side story there.
Yeah.
If you follow him on Twitter, though, you'd know. But Snowden.
He was at South by Southwest.
Sort of.
He was. Virtually.
He was.
Apparently the connection wasn't very good because bits and pieces of the connection had to be obscured somewhat so that couldn't be tracked down, apparently.
Yeah, well, they didn't want to trace it into Russia. But we know he's in Russia.
Russia's pretty big.
True.
Whereabouts in Russia? Who might want to take over?
Anyway.
But an important question was asked, I guess, one of the headline questions.
Knowing what
up.
You do now, Ed, would you do it again? And he said, totally.
Totes.
Well, totes my goats. He did not, in fact, say totes my goats, as far as I know. No, he said he would do it again, you know, really satisfied with how that sort of, you know, bringing that kind of thing into the spotlight and that people are actually debating privacy and security and you know, the role of the government and surveillance and all those things that, you know, I mean, I think we're pretty unashamedly... you know, maybe not an admirer of his work, or maybe we are an admirer of his work, but, you know, we talk about it all the time on this show because it's just such a wealth of amazing information that we never knew.
Yes, and eye-opening stuff. It's the kind of thing that, you know, you
real
kind of suspected,
yeah.
But it's actually confirmed by what he's released. Hasn't actually been confirmed by the agencies, but, you know, they're not going to because we don't confirm or deny anything that related to intelligence matters, right?
Well, that's kind of the point, I guess. Secret Service. Now, he was also saying that the only way to curb mass surveillance from governments is to use encryption, which, again, is something that we've talked about a little bit. But encryption, again, is, you know, I think it's fair to say that it's still out of the reach for a lot of people technologically. Not everyone really understands how to do it or has easy ways to do it.
Because it can be very complex to set up.
It really can. And if you stuff it up and you've encrypted a whole bunch of things that you've magically lost some sort of key to, then whoops.
Yeah.
Because the whole point of, you know, this really high-strength crypto is that no one can break it for years and years and years, not even the NSA.
I think in general terms, like the concept of encrypting things is really around the transport of it, right? So if you're sending stuff around the world, that's when you probably need to encrypt it the most because that's when it's probably going to be eavesdropped the most.
Yeah.
And just a simple fact of encrypting without, you know, too heavy encryption, but at least having it in a form that's a little bit difficult to decrypt is going to be enough to stop you from this information from hoovered up.
Yeah, and I mean, outside of the government, which I'm sure is, and I mean, we did hear this from some of the Snowden leaks, you know, that they are just hoovering up tons and tons and tons of people's stuff. What we can also sort of think about is the be faster than the other runner thing. So, you know, the whole story about how there's a bear and it's chasing two campers and one of them stops and puts his shoes on. He's like, what are you putting your shoes on for, you know? And he goes, oh, I don't need to outrun the bear. I just need to outrun you. Right.
Yes.
Now, the whole principle of, you know, encrypting some of your stuff is to make it slightly less convenient for devious folks, not just the government, but, you know, like hackers or whatever.
Yep.
To get into your stuff.
Yep.
And in fact, Edward Snowden mentioned Google specifically that by encrypting all of their search traffic, which they started doing back in 2010, they're really making it, you know, that much more difficult for I think he referred to it as something like the casual... not the casual observer, but the casual stalker to get hold of this data.
That's right.
And he went on to encourage companies to basically encrypt all of their data on their websites, which you're seeing more and more. So I think Facebook these days, everything is encrypted.
Well, assuming that the SSL certificate and the SSL transport system layer is actually... not hackable in the ways that it has been recently discovered.
Only on Apple devices.
No, it was Linux as well.
It was Linux as well.
Oh, now we know who wasn't listening last week. Yeah, now we know. That was 10 years. Can you believe that? GNU, whatever it is, TLS had been 9 years. That vulnerability had been there for 9 years.
To allow people to spoof a SSL.
Many whatever eyes. Yeah.
Mm. And you know, to be fair, it's not just Apple, it's just not GNU. It is also Microsoft had something similar a little while ago. Mm. We're going back across several different operating systems.
Doesn't Microsoft have something like that every week?
Every Tuesday of the month, Patch Tuesday, where they release all of their updates, unless it's a major one, in which case they push it out quicker, hopefully.
Grab a milkshake. What else is happening at South by Southwest?
How about a drone with a taser?
Tasers, not like lasers, but pretty close.
Aren't they called teachers? Sorry. No, I meant it from the point of view that's the only way that you can control kids.
Oh, my goodness.
Wait.
What? That's even worse.
Are you calling teachers drones?
No,
I don't know.
No.
Kids are...
Are you saying that teachers should be armed?
In my experience... Kids should be tasered.
Michael, the cynical dad. Okay, but there's a robot, though, and I don't think it does any sort of teaching. Its name is Cupid, which stands for Chaotic Unmanned Personal Intercept Drone. And it shoots an arrow, but it's not an arrow of love. It's an arrow of tasing.
It's an arrow of 80,000 volts.
Oh. I could imagine.
Stop my heart, baby.
Why does this exist? Why?
Because you can do it.
Oh,
if it can fly really fast and you're having a bit of a police chase with somebody that maybe you don't want to put a human police officer in front of, that could be a way to, I guess. I'm not sure.
Now, is this autonomous?
Chaotic Unmanned. No, Chaotic's the name of the company. I guess I'm not sure that it's autonomous. I think you still need to control it with a remote control.
No, this scares me as well. There's talk about it being they've got. No official plans. Right, I misread this. So
no official plans. No,
they just
made it for funds.
Yeah. It's a proof of concept. That's all.
But I wonder if there are any authority, like any police forces or something, that are looking at this going, hey, that's a great idea.
We can match it to some facial recognition software and let it go, roam the streets.
Now, at South by Southwest, they actually demonstrated this in a closed room, thankfully, so it didn't go flying off too far, with an intern. What?
Hey, you're the guy who wants a job.
You want a job? You work for us for free and we'll shoot you with our taser robot. How about that? But we'll give you a freebie for South by Southwest.
It is on our Facebook page.
It is.
So if you
go
to our TechnoGaze Facebook page, you can see it.
Yeah.
And you can see this wonderful little intent. But I don't know if it was actually firing any shock, because he'd sort of just lay on the ground after it was fired.
Oh, okay.
So it may have been firing blanks.
Not 18,000 volts then.
No.
No, okay, good.
No.
Oh, bless.
Now, there's something else that came out of South by Southwest, which is potentially very exciting.
Yes.
Well, we all know about transistors and how transistors are used to drive our computers, and sort of they have a binary state of 1 and 0.
The CPU is millions of transistors.
All miniaturized into this tiny little square.
And Moore's law says that every 18 months we can double the number of transistors on the CPU.
Mm.
But obviously after doing this after several years, we're starting to reach some physical limitations.
Mm.
There, a guy by the name of Joshua Turner from the Slack National Accelerator Laboratory made a presentation about the potential for something called...
Orbital computing.
Orbital computing, yes.
It's nothing to do with space, turns out.
No, but what they do is they use the orbits of electrons around the nucleus of an atom as a way to generate these binary states. So it replicates a transistor, but with an atom.
Mm.
Whoops, now.
And... what that means is that potentially we can switch things, because that's all that a transistor does is switch between 1 and 0. You can switch things 10,000 times faster
than
traditional computing. So that's a huge order of magnitude.
And the space required as well, right? Like, it's just amazing the the lack of, we are reaching, as you say, with transistors in their current state, even in their current form, on these dyes that are being made. There's only so far we can go before they actually physically run out of memory.
Mm. Yeah, we reach the boundaries of physics. Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's excellent. So at least we'll be able to continue Moore's Law for at least a bit of time. Maybe Moore's Law will, in fact, be jumped ahead of in a very dramatic fashion once this actually takes off. Presumably, it's got to continue on.
Yeah.
We have a bit of a...
Bit of a correction.
An errata.
That's right. Now, I had this very official-looking bit of paper, special joy notice, etc., which I dutifully read out, and it said that Cupcakes was on tomorrow night at 6:15 p.m. Turns out that Cupcakes is actually on tonight at 6:15 p.m.
In 5 hours and 45 minutes.
That's right, at Acme Cinemas tonight, from 6:15. Now, again, that's part of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. So if you jump online and have a look at the program, you'll see that's the case. And that means, of course, that you need to get on even earlier if you want to book those tickets for that very special screening, don't you?
I'd get on it now.
I'd get amongst it as quick as I could. So tonight, 6:15 p.m.
Well, maybe in 20 minutes' time after our show.
Maybe. Oh, well, you can do it online while you're listening to us
true.
At the same
Multitask.
Time. And Joy members can see that film for only $15 per ticket. So what a deal.
I will just say one thing as well. We've had another message from Sebastian.
Hi, Sebastian.
Hello. iPhone are the quiz nits.
Yes, Sci-Fi and Squeam represent. Well, I love Sci-Fi and Squeam.
I do too. I don't know what quiz nit means.
It could be good, could be bad.
It's a techno gaze on Joy 94.9. Techno gaze.
Joy. Yes, Joy.
Techno gaze.
Joy 94.9.
17 minutes to one.
All of those things and more.
We should try and do the entire intro to the show like one word per person.
That'll sound just great, I'm sure.
Can we pre-record it at least?
Now, tinfoil.
Hang on. Actually, no, keep on talking.
Okay, so the tinfoil, I've just got to do some adjustments here on my head. Hang on. Here we go.
Mark's tinfoil.
There's a few items that came up that caught my tinfoil interest. CIA has hacked into computers of a Senate group investigating a torture program, which has been reported. We can stop adjusting my head now, I think.
rubbing the top of Mark's tinfoil scone.
So the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee investigating the CIA's interrogation and detention program since 2009, her name is Senator Dianne Feinstein, is a Californian Democrat, and she is a staunch defender, in fact, of America's spies. However, she has accused the CIA of hacking into her committee's computers and consequently has referred the matter to the US Department of Justice.
Oh, goodness.
And according to her, they've even gone so far to delete a document or two.
So there's a critical document named the Panetta Review. It's been cited as being at the centre of these allegations, which has been suggested that the CIA attempted to remove that particular document from their systems. Now, while the document wasn't of a classified nature, it is reported as having details of spying techniques that perhaps the CIA would not want to be disclosed, and it actually contains details of significant CIA wrongdoing. Seems to have turned into a bit of a tit-for-tat game.
You can't hack our documents. We'll hack your documents back.
Well, in fact, the CIA have referred the matter to the Department of Justice as well, suggesting that the committee actually hacked into the CIA to obtain the document in the first place. So, what's one government arm versus another government arm going at each other?
A couple of hacks between friends. What's the drama?
A bit of rivalry is good.
But there's some telling information around the head of the department in the CIA that's going after this particular committee right now, having been a subject of previous investigations by the committee. So there's all sorts of accusations going on there.
Look, the subject being torture techniques and things like that is actually kind of a big deal, because that's the sort of thing where if the US is found to be doing things that it shouldn't be, which it has occasionally been accused of in the past. But, you know, it's actually kind of a big deal.
Yes.
Like, war crimes, big deal.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, also over in the US, just to try and show that the NSA stuff that's been the accusations or the revelations perhaps by Snowden and the likes have some weight to them, Stanford University has produced some interesting research.
They sure have.
They've attempted to replicate the processes supposedly used by the NSA to track people's secret wants and desires.
Yeah, now the big thing about what people say about the NSA, right, is that they're only getting your metadata. So they're not actually listening to your calls, but they can tell who you called and when you called them and what text messages were sent to whom and stuff like that.
Yes.
And you might look at that and go, well, what could you possibly learn for it?
Absolutely nothing, surely.
Turns out.
No. Quite a lot. So they actually encouraged volunteers to install a tracking app called Metaphone. It would track the metadata associated to calls made and so forth. Now, the leader of the study, graduate student Jonathan Mayer, says it's quite significant the amount of information you can gain just from the metadata. And I'll quote him, "One of the things which is most concerning about the privacy properties we've uncovered is how easy it is to make inferences about the metadata on a large scale."
And here's the example.
We had a participant who had calls with a lumber yard and a locksmith and a hydroponics dealer and a bong shop.
What possibly could they be building?
I think I would probably need to have some sort of Stanford degree to maybe figure that out. But I'm sure that it's significant to this researcher.
Mm.
But wow, things like that, though, that's the sort of stuff that you know, you kind of want to have as part of an investigation as well. It's sort of, you know, is this person doing the shonky? Well, we can see that they bought this many kilos of fertilizer and, you know, bits and pieces like that, maybe if they're looking for someone that they suspect of doing that. But again, without any sort of due cause, are you picking up, you know, innocent hydroponic farmers or something else? Like, what are you doing?
Yes. Now, to bring this back home a little bit, of course, the Australian Senate Committee there is a Senate Committee, I should say, at the moment, looking into mass surveillance laws here in Australia, and reviewing the Telecommunications Act. Of course, this is following a public backlash last year of the federal government's causing the federal government to scrap plans to force ISPs to keep internet and phone data for at least 2 years. So one can only hope that this study provides some actual tangible information that perhaps a Senate committee can use instead of just referring to Snowden leaks and so forth.
Or concerned citizens writing in, you know, with valid but possibly not, you know, they're founded concerns but without any evidence to back them up.
Yes.
I wonder how you could go about misleading people by making false phone calls and stuff like that just to try and, you know, point somebody who might be listening in the wrong direction.
You watch TV shows like The Wire and everything where those guys are using burner phones to, you know, have communications that weren't linked to them in any way.
Yeah.
And then throwing them out again. I mean, that's pretty hard to do here in Australia because you need to be, identifiable with some federal identification like your Medicare card or whatever.
What, to get a burner phone?
To get a prepaid mobile phone.
Do you?
You do.
Has that changed recently? Because a few years ago, I bought a prepaid SIM, and the only thing I had to do was register it online and put a name and address. But it was like,
could have been
John Smith. No,
sure.
No, I bought this. You bought the SIM from the supermarket.
It may well have changed then. The other thing that you can't do is have more than a few of them. So you can't have 6 prepaid mobile phones in your name.
Oh, really?
Which is without having to go and because, ask somebody very nicely.
There's some software limitation somewhere that stops them from being able to track any more than 6.
Not enough rows in Telstra's spreadsheet.
Ah,
see what you did there.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
We should offer our consulting services to design their back end database properly, so you can have an unlimited number of burner phones.
You are now a man of ideas.
I want to move on because I want to talk about coffee.
Coffee.
We live in a city of coffee, don't we, here in Melbourne?
We do.
We love our coffee. And a big sort of, there's a lot of consumerist coffee machines going on right now, right? So there's those machines that you get those little pods and you insert them into and you can very yeah. quickly and easily get a coffee made.
They are mad convenient, but I got to tell you, I'm not a fan of what actually emerges from them. But if you're in a hurry, right, and you want something that tastes mostly like coffee, and you don't want to clean anything, and also you don't really mind about destroying the environment, then by all means, use these little plastic pods. Oh, that's me editorialising. But anyway, so these Keurig machines, which are a variant of that in the US that's amazingly popular, like I think 13% of US homes have one, their Keurig 2.0 brewer is going to include DRM, Digital Rights Management.
How are they going to do that?
I don't know. Here's the thing. So there's a story that says, oh, yeah, we're going to do this thing. We're totally going to do this thing. But the actual text of the tweets that they said was, and I quote, our Keurig 2.0 brewer will deliver new interactive enabled benefits, which will require it to identify the inserted pack. What a marketing drone comment that is.
Yeah. So are they going to, what, put an RFID or something on the coffee pods?
Yeah, it would seem that they... Well, so what they're trying to do is actually stop you from using an alternative coffee pod
in from their some machine, third party.
Which, you know, by rights, as a consumer, you should be able to, as long as you can.
That's
you know,
exactly
it
right.
fits in.
And if you do use one of those sorts of machines at the moment, I don't know if the Keurig is sold here. I've never seen one. But here in Australia, there are a few other brands. And you can get, you know, you can get other brands of coffee pods that are not from the brand, the retailer, going, you know, this is compatible with the XYZ coffee brewer, this is compatible with the George Clooney
like third-party printer cartridges.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, in the UK, for example, so Nestle tried to take, with their very popular Nespresso, tried to take Dualit, which is another company, to the High Court, going, please don't do that, you know, and the fact that it got to the High Court means that it went on for a long time. Mm. And the High Court in the UK finally said, no, stuff here, you can make as many pods as you want.
I wonder whether something like that would be legal in Australia, because we've got something called third line forcing law, which says that a company can't force you as a consumer to deal with another company if you use the product.
Or stop you from dealing.
With it. I wonder whether it would fall underneath that.
They're really similar laws, so I don't know if it's really been tested very hard here. Certainly with the proliferation of interesting looking pods.
It would also take the ACCC to actually go after them in order to fix any problems that ensue from such a mechanism. But DRM in coffee machines, I mean, it hasn't really worked for online anything, whether it will work in a physical space. That's an interesting concept.
I can see a little recycling thing going on where it's like, give me your real proprietary coffee pods, the ones that you throw out, and I will pull off the little RFID chip and stick it onto these third-party ones.
Or just reverse engineer it somehow so that you can just reproduce whatever weird little thing it's doing. I personally think that it might be possibly some sort of sensor that detects the scent of actual decent coffee and says no.
The scent
that can't
of
be one of
coffee.
Ours. It smells great.
Yes. If only I could put better coffee in one of those machines. That would be excellent. This is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. We're running out of time. It is getting up to the... It's 6 minutes to one right now. Of course, we'll have the nudie foodie with cravings.
Otherwise, keeps his kid on in the studio, I believe.
But we'll have a wrap-up of the show in a few moments. You're listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Technogaze.
You're listening to Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. And we've come up to the end of the show. It's been great having you on again, as always. Just to finish off with, though, a nice interesting tidbit about Google Glass that came up this week.
That's right. So there was a lady named, oh my goodness, I've mislaid her name. Let me just double check what it is. There you go, Sarah Slocum. So she lives in the Bay Area. She's a social media consultant. She wears her Google Glass all the time. And she went into a bar and they were asking her, please take it off, blah, 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 you're making us uncomfortable. So what does she do? Makes a video of everyone telling her this. To show what it's like to be a Google Glass wearer, and apparently it came to blows. It wasn't really good. She's referring to it as a hate crime.
She is.
She sure is.
Really,
I would expect privacy to be of sort of the trump card here, right?
I would have thought so. And in a private bar, if someone says, don't wear your footy gear in, don't wear those muddy shoes in, please put a shirt on, madam. Like, you know, that
because,
sort of...
Because someone's recording over in that corner over there.
No. But I mean, in general, right, you go into a bar, you've got to live by certain standards, right? For everyone's comfort, not just for yours. And if one of those things is please take off your Google Glass, then get on with it. Anyway.
Yes.
If I ever see one in the bathroom, I'm going to be like, nah.
I've been hearing about people sort of developing this sort of little signal. So they actually get their Google Glass and they pop it on the top of their head.
Mm.
Right, because if it's on the top of their head, then the camera, if it's possibly on,
is
pointing
the
at the ceiling. So it's not just, you don't have to take their word for it that they turn it off.
Indeed.
I do like the glass hole term.
Asshole.
Yes.
Google likes to call them explorers, and they have Google explorers, and they have a whole bunch of etiquette that sort of includes things like please stop filming when people ask.
Yeah,
bless. Now that's all we have time for today. If you missed any part of the show, or perhaps you're looking to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by browsing to joy.org.au/listenlive. Coming up next is Cravings with Pete Dillon, the nudie foodie. Thank you for joining me today, Raina.
He did a bit of a double take when you said nudie foodie.
He's got his shirt on and all. Anyway, you're welcome.
Thank you as well for coming in, Michael. It's been great.
It was good.
Have a great weekend. We'll catch you next week.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.